D4.
Number 6B.
We can take point 2 as ordered understanding. We'll see that clear and clearer as we go on. That naturally only then is thought creative, when it unfolds in an ordered way. Creative thinking is not creative thinking if new ideas come without any relationship to one another. But that we always see that when a time is right, the right idea will break through. And that looking back afterwards, one can see there was a divine, ordered unfoldment of how things happened. Therefore, it frees us from that sense which says, I wonder what my next step is. I wonder what I have to do next. Don't ask that. Don't ask that. Let the divine impulsion impel us so that we see the next step, so that the next step impels itself on us before we are aware of it, before we are aware that something happened which is of greatest importance. Because in being, there is an ordered unfoldment. The whole evolution shows an ordered unfoldment. The whole evolution of sciences shows an ordered evolution. Nothing happens by chance. And so, also in our life, in our understanding, we can see that we don't have to say what so often students ask and say, could you tell me what I should study next? It's a question which is quite understandable by a student that he said, tell me, what should I do next? What should I do afterwards? Tell me the curriculum, so to say, of the study of Christian Science. And more, I come to the conclusion that I don't know. That I don't know. That I shouldn't know. That it is right not to know it. Because if I give an ordered curriculum, so to say, of understanding, I give him my limited view of it. I don't let him be lived by the impulsion of the divine urge. And that's the point, that we must learn much more to draw individually from the one being. And not ask people, what shall I do? What shall I study? What shall I study next? I don't know. I don't know. We only know the method, how to know it. And the method how to know it is to see that the word is the study of it. The word is the presentation of the subject. That's the word. And that that word presents itself, out of itself, through its own impulsion, in an ordered way. Now I've gone all through the levels. See? So it's again, you see, it's a demonstration to know what to study next. It's a demonstration to know what to do next. What is the next right step? No human should give us that advice. More and more, as we study these things, we get freed and freed and freed and freed more and more from giving any human advice. That's why really the textbook starts with the chapter on prayer, because the chapter on prayer tells us how to go to the divine mind and how the divine mind will inform us and mold our thought. That's the first page of the textbook. So what's the good of going to a human person and ask the same thing which one should ask the divine mind? Yes. Well, as a second point, no, that's what's the second. As a third, I have put here down that it demands, or it brings about, I nearly said something wrong, it brings about the laying down of the mortal concept. See, here again you have that tone of Christian Science, the relationship between the divine and the mortal. The word says, I am the word and I remain the word and I don't let any anti-word exist. So all false or human systems of reference have to be given up. In other words, if we see the divine system of reference and see that's the word, that's the self-declaration, a self-statement of being, and remaining consciousness there, that helps us to get rid of, completely, of wanting to build really on a mortal concept, on material conception, on human conception. That's the great, you see, that's the great point which Mrs. Eddy pointed out so definitely that she said, there is no new birth unless you detach thought from all material conception. Without that, there is no new birth. The trouble is with humans that they have mortal conceptions, human conceptions of themselves, of their surrounding, of the world, and then try to improve those. Mrs. Eddy calls that the condemnation of the mortal to till the ground. Who wants to have that condemnation? But the way of grace is so much different. The way of grace is that we go out from the Infinite One and see that the Infinite One in science says, I declare myself to you as the Word of God in divine science. And I do that in absolute Christian science with great impulsion. You can't resist it. You can't escape it. And as it comes, naturally, the human concept within us has to yield and does yield. That's on the level of Christian science. And in this way, you really have you feel the whole power, you see, the whole impact of that word which exists by itself. At the beginning was the Logos, the word, and that word was God. We would call it being, with a capital B. Oh, it's terrific. Terrific, when you see. Let's quickly go through these. What I had asked, I think, in question 2B. What is the spiritual import of point 1 when considered in relation to divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science? Also point 2 and 3. You see, what I have asked now is to take those points like this and put them together into one. So what does it mean spiritually, consciously, if we take point 1 in divine science and see its impact as point 1 in absolute Christian science and then its impact as point 1 in Christian science? This is the question. Can you see that? That together is giving the word. If we take point 1, we really can see, you see, where consciousness is. It's there where everything within us turns to the infinite I am, and where we see that the infinite I am says, I'm the only thing that exists. I am self-existent. I exist constantly, constantly, constantly out of myself. I exist by my own being. Everything that is exists by my I am. That I am that I am. That constantly exists. And that, as consciousness remains there and sees that all is already in existence, then we free in consciousness the way for the creative impulsion in Christian science. Then when consciousness is at rest in the one self-existent being, then the impulsion of life has a chance to break through in us. Then we begin to feel the urge of life, the drive of life. And the impact of life is here in point 1 on the level of absolute Christian science, that one existence really then makes us think in a different way, in a new way. And we feel a sense of great creativity within us. So that existence becomes creativity. So that existence which exists where everything already exists, when translated right down to Christian Science, becomes the law of creativity. The law of creativity, like you have it through the 7 days of creation, like you have it in modern sciences where they investigate the law of creativity, like in cybernetics and so on, they all have now investigated how thought develops creatively. Can you see that therefore existence does not contradict with creative thinking or with creativity? So the one says, oh, there is no creation, there is no creativity because already exists. And gives means that he can give, through this statement, a counterproof. It isn't. Both are right. But both belong to a different category. I wasn't quite sure if I put it clearly now. Did you understand it? You see that if we have in divine science existence, the one Christian scientist comes along and says, there is no creative ability, there is no creative thinking, because everything exists already. There is no need for a law of creativity. And the other says, oh yes, we need to be creative. The other says, no, you don't need to be creative, everything exists already. And so they argue against each other. They shouldn't. They only should see that they speak from different dimensions, and that they are the same thing, but from another dimension. And the same thing naturally is with the creative impulsion. Or let's take point two and see how they link together. Here in divine science we have infinite life. I like that point two very much too. Actually, I like everything. I mean, I like something, I always feel the other one likes it too. See, if consciousness is at that point where it just sees that from the point of view of the one being, everything is already absolutely clear. There is such pure transparency that there is no hinge nor taint of error or of ignorance. Everything is absolutely clear. And the more I can stay in that consciousness of that clear, crystal clear transparency of everything, in that measure, really, revelation has a chance to break in. Then those steps, those new ideas, which are now ripe to be brought forth and to jump into expression, now jump into consciousness. And we call it revelation. And in the measure as we feel that revelation and see the new light and see something new, we can see very clearly that this new light brings us step by step further in our spiritual ordered understanding. So that our lives now develop in an ordered way. And you can see that here in Christian Science, with that ordered understanding, step by step understanding, that you take in a time concept. And it must be on the level of Christian Science. Because we can't have an ordered step-by-step understanding in divine science. That is not possible, because in infinite light all is clear. There is no development of understanding. But translated to the human, to where we are, we can see that it has that Christ sense, that Christian Science sense, which says, but I lead you in your time sense and in your space sense and in your human sense, step by step out of your time, space and human sense. So that up in divine science, where we have no factor of time and space, Here, on the level of Christian Science, it takes care of that belief in time and space and leads us on. See that infinite light. Think of the days of creation. Think of the days of creation, how there, in quite different ways, that light is shown. There we can see how Mrs. Eddy stated in Divine Science that all is light, and that light just says, I'm infinite light. And then comes verse 3, and God said, let there be light. See, it seems to be a contradiction. But before Mrs. Eddy would explain that all is light, and that light is all in all, that all is quite clear, that then afterwards there should be that impulsion which says, let there be light. But everyone sees that this is only possible on the level of absolute Christian Science, where that light comes now and reveals what is in being. And then Mrs. Eddy shows on the level of Christian Science that through the light, the darkness disappears. So that the light in Christian Science says to the darkness, disappear. Or that the light says, I am the light and I destroy darkness or ignorance. But up in the level of Divine Science, it wouldn't be reasonable to see that. So, again, one can get those discussions, you know, among Christian Scientists, which you hear all over. See that the one says, well, the main thing is that the light comes to us. The other one, that would be absolute Christian Science. Or the other one says, well, the light makes the darkness disappear, and before the light, the darkness has to give way. And the other one, that would be Christian Science, and the other one comes and says, oh, there is just light, and the light doesn't know any darkness. Well, all three are right. When considered together, when considered apart, they are wrong, each one of them. So a statement is not true just because it is a statement which brings out a truth. It's only then the truth. When those truths are structured together in a whole, and they are seen from the whole. And so in this way, we always find how to arrive really at the stage of Christian Science of the practical level. Or what is the next one? Is the point 3, infinite individuality. See? All right, we see the divine being, the Word of God, is a completely indivisible being. Therefore, the one infinite undividedness of being. One infinite individuality. And this infinite individuality comes at every moment, because absolute Christian Science has always to do with the specific case, comes at every moment through the law of spontaneity as infinite individualities. And as it comes as infinite individualities, naturally on the level of Christian Science, we must give up the idiosyncrasies. No, that's not true. See, sometimes I fall back in the old Mosaic law. Because we are in a way of transition, you see. We must not give up, but it forces us, you see, to give up our idiosyncrasies. It forces us, it impels us to give it up. Naturally, that transition where we are forced to give up can show itself as chemicalization, as crisis, as something very disharmonious and so on, which actually is only the working of the true idea. But that is something we will discuss when we take the Christ order. That's the beauty there, when we take the Christ vertical. Here, just see, you see, that it's no use trying to give up a false sense of ourselves. But that through a higher consciousness, a higher level of consciousness, we are impelled to give it up. It gives itself up. It has no more root within us to grow and to exist. So, again, see what I want to point out? This is a method of grace, a method of divine consciousness, and not a method of good religion, of good ethics, of good morals, where you try with good morals, with good ethics, to be a better boy. But where one puts away the whole thing, all material conception, puts that right away, and say, what is truth? What is the real? And start right from the one being. And that demonstrates itself as what it is. Yes. Well, that's the vertical of these things.